Welcome to the Relationship as Medicine podcast. I'm your host, Shelby Lee. Outdoor adventure enthusiast, dog mom to Luna, world traveler, longtime meditator, espresso lover, and a trained somatic psychotherapist, trauma specialist, and certified coach. Talking about trauma doesn't have to be so daunting. From a connected place, we can navigate anything together. Looking forward to exploring with you today. Here we go. I'm so looking forward to introducing you all to my new friend and colleague, Danae. Danae is a therapist, facilitator, and co-host of the podcast Cheaper Than Therapy. She is known for her nurturing presence and authenticity. Danae specializes in supporting couples in finding more fulfillment in their relationships and utilizing her background in depth psychology to explore how each of us can reclaim the aspects of our authentic selves we've been societally conditioned to turn away from. Her first book, Liberated Love, A Guide to Healing Relationships by Reclaiming the Masculine and Feminine Within, is being released May 2024. Welcome, Danae Logan. I'm so happy to have you here.
Oh, thank you, Shelby. I'm so excited to be here with you.
Anything that you want to add to your bio, to where you are in the world, to how you are today?
I'm feeling really good today. I'm in LA and we've had so many weeks of rain, which is not the norm for us. So it's a really, really beautiful day here. And the sun is coming in as I'm talking to you, which feels really nice because I am someone who really loves the sunshine, obviously, a little bit of why I moved here. So I'm just excited to sit down and see what comes to the surface in our conversation.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I'm in snow, woke up to a blanket of snow here in Central Oregon and 50 elk drinking from the river in front of my house.
Oh, so beautiful.
I'm just a little stunned that it's still winter, but it's beautiful to get to witness it here. So nice. Yay. I reached out to you because I have been following you on social media and really enjoy your, what I would call, grounded approach to talking about relationships and relating. And what I enjoyed was what seems like you're not pathologizing people. And there is nothing I love more than a therapist or a practitioner that knows how to welcome everything that people come with, everything that people want, how to look at how society shapes us and makes space for something totally different to happen. And I just appreciate your work and would love to hear more about if that feels resonant for you and accurate and what inspires you to do the work that you do.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for that, Shelby. That means a lot to hear. I think that's certainly true of my perspective on, you know, what it means to heal, what it means to hold space for one another as therapists, coaches, healers, you know. And it's a little bit of a challenge for me, the social media sphere, because as much as I love that, I think what social media has done is really normalize having conversations about things like having a therapist. I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, so it was very like, you know, when I don't know that it's still like this there, but when I grew up, it was very much like if someone was seeing a therapist, it was like a secret. It's like so-and-so is going to couples therapy and like, you know, something that had some sort of a layer of shame surrounding it. And I love that what I do feel like social media has done is really normalized the fact that, you know, all of us struggle in some way, shape, or form. You know, the highlight reels that a lot of times are what is projected on social media are becoming less, from my perspective, or maybe these are sort of the accounts that I follow. But it's becoming less like pretending like anyone is living a perfect life or not struggling with something in their day-to-day lives. And I think that's really important because I think there's so many ways that we can imagine that in the midst of our struggles, that there's something wrong with us. I think that, you know, you probably have experienced in the people that you hold space for, that that's one of the most common themes, I think, that really keeps us in our pain points, feeling like there's something wrong with me and no one has ever experienced or gone through what I'm going through. And the beautiful thing about being a therapist from my perspective is that I have just such a front row seat to the fact that that is not at all the case, that all of us not only go through our own struggles, but a little bit, I believe that's what it means to be alive. I think that's what we came here for. And so, you know, as you were saying, when you were reading my bio, I come from a depth psychology background. And, you know, for anyone listening who doesn't know what I mean when I say depth psychology, I really like to think of depth psychology as the psychology that explores the experience of our soul. And so that we are not, you know, human beings who every once in a while have spiritual experiences. We are spiritual beings having a human experience for a period of time. And so with whatever the struggle is, I really love to tap into curiosity. And I think that that is sort of like the common thread that runs through depth psychology, is how do I be in the space of curiosity about whatever this is, whatever is coming up relationally, whatever's coming up in terms of a struggle or a pain point that I keep sort of feeling like I'm butting my head up against. What does this experience come into my life to teach me about myself and to really support me in my growth and my expansion? And I do think that depth psychology, we're sort of taught to shy away from the pathologizing. And that's not to say that, you know, we're not grateful to have diagnoses, because I think that there's a way that that can feel really supportive in helping us understand something that I've been struggling with to get some sort of a diagnosis. But that's not necessarily the lens that I hold the work with clients. I tend to stay away from pathologizing as much as possible and really attempting to stay in the space of curiosity.
Mm-hmm. And even if there is a diagnosis, it's not who I am.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah,
this is a tool and a lens from which to see through, to relate to myself differently, to get support differently, things like that.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Soul perspective. My big thing too is leading with presence. And that means leading with curiosity above everything else, tools, trying to fix, trying to change, trying to figure out. And so I just really appreciate the leading with curiosity. It's everything when we're sitting with another human being who is struggling, who has struggled and might think they're broken. But when we're curious, we get to be open to everything that they are and reflect that back to them.
Yeah, I love that. And I think a lot of times people will ask me the question, why is that important to stay in the space of curiosity? And I think, you know, a little bit of why I think in depth psychology, we shy away from the practice of pathologizing, or, you know, even if there is a diagnosis, I try to, as much as I can, like, I'd rather not know a lot about it, because I think whenever I am, you know, in any sort of a label, and that label can be something as subtle as like, I sit with another Black woman to do the work of, you know, therapy. And if I focus on the fact that we are both Black women, I will miss something. I will miss being in the space of curiosity about how our experiences have been different. And that can be socioeconomically, that can be, you know, what her experience of gender or othering is that I'm not seeing. If I just focus on the label of like, we're both Black women, so obviously we both like understand each other, right? But, and I think that's true of whatever the label is that we're putting on, whatever the thing, we can miss so much if we focus on the label and don't sort of shift into that space of what is there for me to be curious about and learn about whoever it is that I'm connecting with, you know?
Right. Because we all really want to just be seen, heard, understood, and held. And as soon as we're like locked into that box, we lose that sense of presence and curiosity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how did you get here? Were there some of your own struggles that lit up that made you curious about this path? You're welcome to share as much or as little as you like about, yeah, what brought you here?
Sure. Yeah. You know, excuse me. I touched a little bit on some of the struggles that I had early on being in my skin. I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska. And when I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, I was sort of the diversity. So I think it's changed a little bit now from what it was when I was growing up, but it was very much like, you know, me and my brother, I had a best friend who was Korean. And like, beyond that, like, it was a very like completely white environment. And so there were a lot of ways that belonging and feeling okay in my skin were struggles for me. I very much, I'm an extremely introverted person, but I didn't feel that way when I was young, or I didn't sort of have the language for that, or an understanding of why I felt so sensitive. Like I would, you know, a friend would bring me into their country club, like as an example, when I was young, and like bring me as a guest, and everyone there had never seen a Black person because that just wasn't, you know, what went on there. And so the experience of the entire room of people sort of looking at me as a child and feeling very othered and very, you know, self-conscious in that space really impacted me. I was a very sensitive soul in that way, but also extremely introverted. And so what I learned when I was young was really how to perform extroversion and how to, you know, do what I needed to do to be likable and to make people forget that I was different. That felt really important to me when I was young. And so the way that that continued to show up as I got a little bit older was just, you know, as is the case with so many adolescents, fitting in and being a part of the group looks like drinking and partying. And, you know, I think things that are all like, I understand now to be really developmentally normal, but I used to do those things to like almost sort of armor up to keep myself safe in environments that I didn't feel comfortable in, or that I felt insecure as I was entering. So all of that to say that, you know, there were a lot of years that I really got comfortable in the space of numbing, and whether that was like really focusing on like controlling my body and sort of like disordered ways of eating, or just like drugs and alcohol in an extent that was like pretty excessive. I had some struggles around that type of thing when I was younger. And eventually got to a point where I realized that that way of being and operating just wasn't sustainable, which is where I found therapy for myself. And, you know, a lot of people initially feel like therapy is just like awkward. I always think it's so funny to me now because I've been doing this for so many years. And like, this is like my sweet spot, my space that I love is being in these deeper conversations. But a lot of times people are like, so strangers just like come in, sit down and start telling you about their personal lives. Like, that's fascinating. And I'm like, yeah, that's what we do. But I loved it from the jump. I was like, this is like, there was something about the questions that my therapist would ask me that nobody had ever asked me, ways of exploring things that I'd never heard anyone talk about. And it was just like something clicked for me and I came alive. And I also, I really always loved spiritual conversations. I used to like geek out on like Oprah's Soul series, and like she would bring on all these spiritual teachers, and I would just like love the conversations they were having. And so I think, gosh, like in my early 30s, I decided to stop using drugs and alcohol completely. And I used to identify as an addict. I don't really anymore. That's a whole other conversation because I think we're all addicts to a certain extent. But that sort of like journey into sobriety and into putting down some of the ways that I had been, you know, anesthetizing my difficult experiences really led me into deeper curiosity around like what it might mean to give back some of what I was finding in the healing modalities that I loved. And I taught yoga for a lot of years. And so I really loved holding space in that way, but I felt like people would come to me after class a lot of times and they would be asking me things about their personal lives. And I'd be like, well, I'm not a therapist, so I really don't feel equipped to support what you're asking me. But I kind of felt like, but I would love to be, and I love therapy. And so, some of the therapists that I really loved were also yoga teachers and were in the realm of sort of like spiritual psychology and conversations around the soul. And I sort of like did some digging and exploration and found that a lot of them went to a grad school called Pacifica in Santa Barbara. And when I went there and visited, I absolutely fell in love. It's a really unique curriculum and way of learning where you go there once a month and it's just like a immersive retreat experience. And And it's so much more about the development of the therapists, I feel like, than it is necessarily the work. I mean, certainly we learn a lot. It's grad school, but it's also like a really transformational experience for all of the people that go through that school personally. And so that sort of was the path that I took to doing the work that I do now.
I am just smiling while you're sharing. What an incredible story. And we have a lot of parallels. I think we would have hung out as very sensitive beings. Mm. I went to CIIS, almost went to Pacifica.
Oh, wow.
Like, which one? And yeah, it sounds like so beautiful to get to have it in the retreat experience and to sink into the or into who you are instead of the other way around.
Yes.
And yeah, what a journey. I'm kind of in awe at the moment because the people ask me the same question when I'm interviewed, and my path was as a meditation teacher, getting those questions, and then found being a therapist as well. So
I love that.
It's fun getting to know you in this platform. And I just really want to honor, you know, the struggles and the history that you shared. Mm-hmm. It's, I imagine, tender still in many ways, and just really appreciate how you found your path and that you're now supporting others on their path. That is no small thing.
Well, thank you for that. You know, it's interesting, as you said, that you imagine that it still feels tender, and it's interesting. You know, I have such a way of holding all of it. And I think that this is certainly the perspective I hold with clients a lot, that like none of it's wasted. It is all so perfectly orchestrated from my perspective to support us in gathering up little tidbits of knowledge that we will need for whatever we're meant to do. I feel like I wouldn't change a thing, even in the spaces where sometimes if I look back at my younger self, I'm not necessarily proud of some of the ways that she might have hurt some people, or she let some people down, or, you know, just was a little bit thoughtless and inconsiderate, things like that. I have so much compassion for my younger self, understanding that she was doing the best she could with the tools that she had at the time. And I've acquired a lot more tools since then. So, you know, all of it is exactly as it needed to be. And I think what I have experienced in my own life gives me a lens through which I'm really able to support others without a lot of judgment or ideas of like what their lives should be, or, you know, what it means to like live the life that you should be living. I genuinely don't have that, because I think whatever we're going through is sort of like the perfect sauce that we need to create our own stew or whatever.
Absolutely. You said, I think you said this before we hit record, something about, you know, life is struggle in many ways. Mm-hmm. That's what it's all about. And I was curious to hear more about what you mean by that and your view and experience of that.
Yeah. You know, I think so many of my spiritual teachers have informed the way that I hold space for others. And I have just always been a seeker, and like, I find the most peace and the most solace in the inquiry around attempting to understand. Now, sometimes on my path, that can be a place that I tend to try to go to a little bit too quickly. That's something that I know about myself, that thing of making meaning. So sometimes my work is to stay in the gunk and in the mud and allow myself to just like really be struggling without making meaning. And so I want to name that can be a thing that we do, especially if we're really good at constructing meaning out of situations. But one of my favorite teachers, Caroline Mace, said something about like, you know, our ego mind really convinces us that there should be struggling somewhere, just not for me, right? Like, it's like, yes, I believe that the world has suffering and has struggling, but not in my house. Like, for me, everything should be easy. And that's really what it feels like in those moments where we've experienced a heartbreak, or someone has let us down, or we didn't get the thing that we were certain was the thing that we were meant to get. It becomes really difficult to trust in those moments that we haven't seen the entire trajectory of our lives yet. And so we don't know why not getting the thing might have been, you know, the saving grace that we don't see it as in this moment, or this heartbreak is
really deepening my experience of what it is to love on a level that I might not have understood if I didn't experience this heartbreak. So I think all of it is, you know, happening for us. And I think that there's understandable resistance in that space. And that's a part of it too, you know, being in the resistance and loving ourselves through the resistance, I think is a lot of our work. Like sometimes I like to literally talk to my inner little girl and validate why she's in that, you know, tantrum space that she needs to be in for as long as she needs to be there, and literally just talk to her about it and say, yeah, Danae, I get it. Absolutely. It's completely understandable. This is hard and you get to be here as long as you need to be. But I think we're so quick to shame ourselves. I think that's so much of what we're conditioned societally to do is like, suck it up, get over it, like pull yourself up by your bootstraps, whatever the thing is. And I think a lot of times that's actually counterproductive. I think we are ready to be done with something when we're ready to be done, but not one moment sooner. And I think that if we sort of say like, yes, life is struggle. These struggles are all happening in the greater orchestration of my expansion and who I am meant to become. And in the midst of the storm, sometimes I get to be in a little resistance and feeling like, this is friggin' hard, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I just felt my heart just kind of like melt open when you said that. It's such a marker of healing in my view, to be able to slow down enough to actually welcome the little one and to be like, yeah, of course you feel that way. It makes sense. I'm here as long as you need. Yes. That's a lot of work for a lot of people to get there, and just to see it come through so naturally with you. I just am like, oh, this is the healing.
Thank you. That means a lot.
Yeah. The, what would you call it? Orientation towards, yeah, life has struggle. It sounds very Theravada Buddhist too. Like life is suffering and it's how we meet it. It's the compassion that arises in us. It's the relationship we create with it that creates the freedom and the expansion and the ability to be with everything from pleasant to unpleasant and neither. And we can't, some of us tend towards like struggle is all we know and others have it easy. And some of us tend towards others have it hard. It should be easy for me. And it's like, how can we make space for it all for each of us?
Yeah. You know, I think there's something, Shelby, and I couldn't see until I became a therapist and really started to sit and hold space for people. And I started to like identify that it's always the story we're telling ourselves about what should be happening that is actually creating the suffering, or what should have happened that didn't happen, or what could conceivably happen that would be a good or a bad thing. But it's always the narrative, and it's never like, you know, facts. Like I love Byron Katie's work because I think that it can be like a really tangible tool for like how to be in the inquiry around what else could be true, or how is the story I'm telling myself about whatever the situation is, you know, leading to more suffering. And I have found that, and this is a little bit like why I think some of the metaphysical concepts have been really supportive of the way that I love to hold space for other people. I think that in every moment we sort of are looking at whatever the situation is through the lens of something that makes us feel really defeated and really, you know, like hopeless and like heavy, or we're looking at it through the lens of something that makes us feel a little bit more empowered or a little bit more like, here's the growth, here's the expansion, here's the way I can hold this that gives me a little bit of an exhale. And I think it's always a choice. And to the point we were making a moment ago, we are ready to see that choice when we're ready. And so I do want to name that it's important not to force ourselves there. But I think to the point that you were just making, if we are in the space where we are always in the choice of like, what is the defeating narrative? Or what is the way I'm holding this that is perpetuating my suffering? That to me is where there's a little bit of an opportunity to be in the work of inquiry around, is there another way that I can hold this? Or am I, and this is often the case with so many of us, just so committed to this narrative, committed to the story of my suffering, that I'm not willing to to be in that inquiry. And that's a choice, and that's okay too. But I think that sometimes it's just understanding that that's the choice that I choose to make. But I've been fascinated watching clients and seeing the extent to which the narrative that I'm holding around the should is often the experience I have of my life, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this should. I really appreciate your point around how most of the struggle and suffering comes from how we think it should be, and not really examining or inquiring around these stories and pausing enough to just even notice that we're creating these stories. It can be so freeing. And I really like what you said, like, we're not ready to make that choice until we are ready.
Yeah.
As someone who works with a lot of complex and developmental trauma, I just want to be mindful that sometimes we can't see another story until we have enough support and safety. It's not like we just choose to be happy or struggle less or any of that. It takes time to build safety. And yes, we can't force our mindset. and all these tools are wonderful. But I don't want anyone sitting here shaming themselves to be like, oh, I just didn't use that tool right, or whatever.
Yeah. And I do think that that ends up being a defense mechanism of our ego mind as well, right? Like, I'm doing it wrong if I'm not there, or someone saying that there is the possibility of cultivating tools is like something that I should feel some sort of shame around. And I will say that that is the steps that we have the opportunity to take in the direction of shifting whatever the thing is. And if I hadn't held space for people who have been through levels of trauma and life circumstances that I literally are hard for me to sit and continue to think about when I think about what they have told me and seen the way that they have utilized tools and made the choice to reframe the narrative of what they have experienced in a way that is empowering to them. Like, I literally have been in the space of, if you can do it, nobody can tell me that it's not possible, because what you have experienced in this body is beyond comprehension or for me to even stay in for very long. And so the fact that it's possible gives me the belief that it's possible, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I imagine we both do what we do. Just being able to know that so much healing is possible beyond anything some of us maybe could have never imagined. And it's just such an honor to get to sit with that, however anyone gets there and whatever time frame they get there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I love to say, you know, source, God, universe, whatever feels true for you or applicable is not on our, you know, human timelines. And so source loves you and is not like interested in you rushing to get anywhere that isn't the truth of where you are. I think that's a very, like another construct of the ego, right? That like, I'm not where I should be. It's like, no, you are perfect. You're exactly where you are meant to be in this moment. And the source energy within you that loves you unconditionally is not, you know, in any way impatient with your development. I think back on like my younger self and just how much there was an energetic that was just like loving me through it. Like, oh, Danae, you're hilarious with all of these antics. And I think it's so beautiful now, but there was a time where I really shamed myself for not being where I felt like I needed to be. And that everybody else around me seemed to be getting it and adulting well. And I just like felt like I couldn't get there. And no, it was all perfect. And I think holding ourselves with that compassion, a lot of times I find the quicker that I'm able to be in that space of radical self-forgiveness, the more quickly I'm able to move into the space of forward momentum. But a lot of times the stagnancy comes from me shaming myself or comes from, I should be somewhere that I'm not yet. And it's actually not as helpful as we think it would be to shame ourselves, you know?
Or I love the added one of, I'm a therapist, I should know better.
I should be less human. Yeah, no, totally.
That really hit me. I needed to hear that today. You said that you go to making meaning really quickly when you're in that space of uncertainty or whatever it is. And I've been in that space of massive uncertainty as I'm in a spiral of my healing process just this week. And I notice how quickly I go to trying to control it all. And I I was in that space of, I need to be moving faster. Like, where's the ranch that I want to buy? You know, where's this? Where's that? Why is this not happening fast enough? Why, you know, all these shoulds, all these shames, and hearing that spirit is, you know, has no pace, really. You said it so eloquently, whatever you said. It just, oh, what a soothing thing to remember. And I felt that in the moment when you said it.
Thank you for that, Shelby. For me, I think the reason that, and I'm unbelievably grateful for some of the more clinical modalities of psychology and ways of working therapeutically. And I have found in my own life and in my work with clients, the spiritual principles that I've been most supported by are sort of the only way I know how to hold the most difficult moments, the most, confronting experiences of uncertainty. Like, that's where we go when we're like at our wits end on the bathroom floor, as I love to speak to it. Like, we're not, you know, sort of like, well, let me end again. Even as I say this, I'm like catching myself. It's not like, well, what is the technique that I need to follow? It's sort of universe, God, I'll do anything. Like, I have no other option. I've, you know, exhausted every other way. I'm ready to try it your way. And it's normally surrender to something bigger, but again, we're there when we're ready to get there. And so I think it's all perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. I was in that very familiar patriarchal struggle of, I'm in this place that I rented that is, couldn't be slower, you know, dirt roads, slow river, nobody else in the house. And everything in me wanted to rest. And the other part of me was like, you don't get to rest, create this new program, book this or create this new retreat, do this, do that, call it, you know, whatever. And I was just like, it intensely uncomfortable in that struggle that in order to be X, Y, and Z successful, appreciated, acknowledged, validated, that I need to be this, I should be that. And when I could surrender, I went to the body. Although I always need to remember the spirit aspect. That's part of my trauma healing. I went to my body and my body was just like, fuck you, fuck this. I want to rest. Like, and that was all I needed was in terms of permission, in terms of guidance and resolving that struggle that I know so many of us get stuck in, the left brain, right brain, and the conditioning that we carry.
Yeah. It's always amazing to me the extent to which the body feels like the access point to truth, really. The body holds all of it. And, you know, I was a yoga teacher, as I was saying, for so many years. And I worked at a yoga studio where I would just like jump into teacher trainings because I worked at the front desk for a lot of years in Venice. And I would never cease to be amazed by how many women especially, but people would have come to yoga through some sort of trauma and they really went to war with their bodies. So a lot of people, had eating disorder recovery backgrounds and sort of like yoga was like that access point of coming back into the space of embodiment and everything that felt inaccessible in terms of things I was not willing to look at, things I was unable to heal. All of a sudden, I came into my body and started being in presence in a way that I wasn't able to before. And oh, like the floodgates open, right? And I think that's been so many of our experiences. Certainly was my experience, you know, first time in Savasana, like lying down and like waterworks of tears. I'm like, why am I crying? What is happening? But I think it's beautiful that a lot of times what we aren't able to tackle in our rational minds, the body will give us access to bridge our way back to ourselves.
Completely. And for me to spirit.
Absolutely.
The moment I can go, oh yeah, I have a body. And everything is right here as soon as I'm willing to feel it, as soon as I'm willing to just be with, and then spirit's here too. Yeah. It's pretty incredible.
Absolutely. I think I've really come to this understanding of, well, in the last couple of years, really, that energetic energetic of spirit is not outside of me, that that is something that is within me. And so when I say, you know, that we are being led back to ourselves, like that is our higher selves. That is the self that knows that we are not separate from that energetic of source. And so it's like the self that is within me that always knows what I'm capable of, that loves me without condition, that knows that like I am a part of all of this. You know, if I love to say, if God, source, universe is the ocean, then we are little cups of the ocean that believe that we are something other than that, you know, and that is, I think, the source of our suffering so often, believing that, you know, indigenous populations, when a child is born, they say, welcome, you know, you belong with us. You are the precise element of what our society has needed. You are part of us, right? And we've lost that in our modern society. We really sort of raise children with the idea that you need to hustle for that belonging. I call it weaponizing belonging. And so that thing that you were talking about, like that thing that we have all experienced of like, I need to do more to be enough, right? That is the weaponizing of our fundamental human need to know that we belong here, and that exactly who we are is the ingredient that society needs because we're here. And so our belonging is our birthright, but somewhere along the way, we got it a little bit backward and thought that we needed to hustle and to do something in order to prove that we belong, where really everything that we are meant to create and do and be in this lifetime just starts to, you know, magically flow into our experience once we exhale into that experience of like, can I be enough right now for me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What you just said is so stunning. I feel like we need to hear that again and again, especially as practitioners too, that, you know, it feels vulnerable to be like, okay, so my life's work is helping people feel safe enough to slow down. Yet I'm out here in the woods, losing my mind, trying to slow down.
Feel that.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, such a gift to be in this humanness, human experience as a practitioner, going through it all, just as everyone we work with goes through it. And to, for me, every time I meet this experience, it's different, a little bit different every time. There's a little bit more compassion, a little bit more space, a little bit more insight. And that has to be more than enough. Mm.
Yeah, I love that. You know, I think this patriarchal society is so linear, right? Like that we sort of believe that there's like a point of arrival and then we're going to get there and we're going to like, all the problems are going to be solved and I'm going to understand myself forevermore. And in my experience, that's not exactly how it works, right? But I think we are coming into the remembrance of what I would speak to in terms of our feminine wisdom, you know, the intuitive sense that we are a part of source, of the larger whole, and that the experiences we have are more circular and that we are going to revisit things. But as you just said, it's from the space of expansion. So yes, we're revisiting different layers of healing, but I like to think of it like a spring, right? Like, so we're expanding, but we're sort of leveling up. Yeah. We're like ascending somehow. And I'm not where I was, but yes, I am like revisiting the things that I need to understand, but from a different level, but it's all perfect. I think a lot of times we feel like, why am I back here again? Like I've done so much work, or I have such a depth of understanding of these concepts, or I'm holding space for other people. And it's, yeah. And different people are going to come into our lives to support us in expanding in new ways and understanding in this life school what we are meant to understand now. And a lot of times I love to hold it. It makes me feel empowered to hold it, like, oh, I'm ready. I'm ready for this next level up. I'm ready for this next level of challenge, right? Because it just feels a little bit more empowering to me than like, here I am again in the muck. I'm just really struggling. If I hold it as like, oh, I must be ready for the next level of my development.
Yes.
Feels a little bit better in muscle somehow, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I noticed for me, I was actually even excited to welcome it. I was like, oh, something big is moving here. Something really wanting to come through. This is a lot of energy. And isn't that interesting? So a lot of curiosity instead of, oh no, or like that tensing against. I was just like, okay, I have space for this now. There's enough safety in my system. And just like you modeled so beautifully earlier, like holding those young parts that are like, what in the fuck is happening right now? This is really overwhelming. Yeah. So I'm just so struck. We had talked about talking about something totally different and we made it all the way here to spirit. And I don't think that I've ever talked about spirit, source, divine, whatever you want to call it, on my podcast. And I just am so grateful that that is coming in now. It's perfect timing and that you brought that here. Thank you.
Thank you. I mean, such a gift to be able to share the space with you and talk about it. And as we were talking about before we got on, psyche always sort of enters and whatever is meant to come to the surface always does, never ceases to amaze me.
Yeah. I love getting to partner with people on this podcast who are just down to follow the threads, follow the aliveness, see what happens, even if it's going to be messy. So I really appreciate you jumping in with me. And is there anything else that feels alive that you'd like to share before you tell us how we can find you and what you're up to?
I mean, I don't think so. Yeah, just such a gift to have this conversation with you and an honor to meet you.
Thank you. You as well. So I imagine folks will be so curious about you. How can they find you and what will they find?
Well, I don't know what you'll find. So I am co-host of a podcast called Cheaper Than Therapy, as you mentioned earlier. And, you know, I'm on all the social medias, even in the midst of that love-hate relationship I feel like we often have with the socials. But on Instagram, I am Denae.Logan, L-O-G-A-N, on TikTok, which is new for me, but I'm trying to get in there, Shelby. I am Miss Interdependent, because that is something that I'm also really passionate about, talking about how we shift from some of the codependent templates that we've been offered in our society to the space of a little bit more interdependence, which I think is a lot of what we're talking about on a more tangible level, right? Like really sourcing my sense of grounding and my being okay in my skin in my relationship with source, and that that is like the consistency that I can always come back to when I feel afraid.
Yeah. I just got goosebumps. Yeah.
Beautiful.
All right. So y'all go check out Denae's work. Denae's Instagram has, I don't know how you pull so many incredible memes and words of inspiration and all of that, but it's just so easy. I think the first time I found you, I spent hours just reading so much. So it's really beautiful. Go check out Denae. And yeah, thank you again so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Shelby. Truly a gift.
Thank you so much for listening today. If you loved the conversation and you're a coach or therapist, you might check out my program, Body of Work. It's open for enrollment now. It's my 10-month online professional development program. Land in a community of wholehearted practitioners inspired to deepen their embodied practice while supporting their clients. Join me in this worldwide revolution where we regulate our nervous systems, come home to our bodies, and be present to what arises for those we work with in a skilled and spacious way. Right now, my program's Body of Work and Creating Safer Space are open for enrollment, and when you sign up for one or both, there's a sweet discount through the end of April. Check it out.